Hey, it's Doug, and welcome to the Mile High Five podcast. Today we have a rebroadcast, but it's a timeless topic, FIRE and early retirement as you're approaching or in a recession. And it's a fear that many people have. Currently, when I'm recording this intro, the markets are high, but there's always a chance. There's always a recession on the horizon. So it's something people think about and are quite nervous. So we dive into some of the details. And one funny thing with this particular episode, which was broadcast a long time ago, so even if you listened to it before, you probably hardly even remember it. But I made a little mistake while we were reading a quote. So I inserted the rereading of the quote. And the thing is, I recorded a little intro to talk about that. So I'm not going to talk about it here, but we're going to play it again because it actually lays out the context perfectly. And I don't want to repeat it. And it's a very meta situation. So there's multiple intros for a podcast that we recorded a long time ago. So I'll stop there and I will thank our sponsor, Ghostbed. So a listener contacted us a while back and said, hey, I want to sponsor the show. I'm a listener and I work with this mattress company, Ghostbed. And by the way, they don't just have mattresses. They have mattresses, of course, but they have bed frames, including adjustable bed frames. They have like a travel, sort of an RV style mattress. They have bedding, they have pillows. I have one of the pillows personally. And one cool thing with the adjustable base is obviously it goes kind of up and down, the head and the foot adjust. But for me personally, I tend to snore sometimes, not always, but sometimes I snore. And just having that little bit of an elevation helps a lot. So if you are a snorer, it's something that you can look into. But anyway, Rich, who is now our friend, we met him at Economy, he said, I do want to sponsor the show. And we told him no several times, but he said, I really like the show and I want to sponsor it. So we've been working with them for a pretty long time now. And like I said, we got to meet Rich out there in Cincinnati for the Economy conference and highly recommend the beds. It's an American owned, family owned business with 20 plus years of experience, 60,000 five-star reviews and patented sleep and cooling technology. And that's one of the things, they have a sort of a cooling layer in the mattress. So I'm a hot sleeper. That is one of the biggest improvements I've had in my sleep, is just like cooling myself down. So they also have a 101 night at home sleep trial. So if you're on the fence and you're like, I'm not sure which mattress, number one, they have a little quiz that you can take. So if you go to the website, you'll be able to take that little quiz, but you'll also have a sleep trial. So if you're not sure which mattress or you're a little bit nervous without trying it out, 101 nights is plenty of time to understand if you like the mattress or not. So you can save 50% site-wide if you go to ghostbed.com/milehighfi. So thanks to Ghostbed. And let's get to the next intro before we get to the episode. But I love the episode. And again, it's evergreen. It's something you could think about. And if people ask you like, oh, what if you retire as we're approaching a recession, which, I mean, really, there's always one just a couple years away. So this is some of the thoughts they may have. Here are some of the responses you might have if you're already retired. And of course, if you're approaching, hopefully this will give you some security that things are going to be okay. This is the Mile High Five podcast with Carl Jensen and Doug Cunnington. We have authentic conversations about the journey to FI, health, happiness, and some very odd tangents. We interview FI experts, side hustlers, people on their way to FI, and those who have reached the other side. Join us every week, and if you want the show notes and links and all that other stuff, head over to milehighfi.com. Hey, what's going on? It's Doug here. I just want to jump in before we get to the full episode. I, for some reason, kind of pride myself on being able to do these episodes and my own podcast in generally one take with very few edits. There's only been one situation where Carl and I have had to edit an episode. We were reading information from like a table or a chart and it was kind of hard to do. So we needed to, you know, just do it again to make it more clear. So with like 120 some odd episodes, we've only had to do like one true edit like that. Today, this episode is another case. This one was 100% my fault. We were doing great. running through the episode, there was a quote that I wanted to read, and I got about halfway through and then just started laughing. And it's not a funny quote at all. I don't know why I started laughing. Well, I do, and I'll explain a little bit more. But anyway, I'm going to end up re-recording it because it was ridiculous what happened, and I just could not stop laughing. I got giggling. It made Carl start laughing, and just thinking about it makes me laugh now. In fact, I'm pretty sure when I read this quote again, I'm going to have to re-record it like 3 or 4 times because I'm just going to think about how I was laughing before. I don't know. I just got kind of silly for some reason. So anyway, if you're listening to it, we will seamlessly just insert the quote and you won't even notice. So the quote will be in there. It should be good. I think we'll be able to figure it out. We may be laughing on the tail end of it, but it'll work out okay. If you're watching on the YouTube side, we're going to edit it in. There's just going to be, you know, a talking head of me reading the quote, and then it'll roll back to the normal viewing experience. But because it's so ridiculous, we will put the blooper at the end, and it will, you'll just understand that I was reading fine and then it got silly. The reason why I started laughing is I was reading a quote. And it's from Michael Kitsis, right? So it's a good blog post. And I was reading a quote. And one thing, you may not know this, but a lot of times it's hard to read a very long sentence out loud or to communicate it if you don't know the exact cadence of how you should pause for commas, or maybe there's an M dash or a colon, or there's some complexity with it. So anyway, I just messed up the cadence. I thought I was at the end of a sentence and I paused, and it wasn't the end of a sentence. It was just a comma. So I paused for much too long. And when I started back up, I realized that I was starting in the middle of a sentence and it just sounded silly. And I just could not stop laughing. So that is why we ended up with this sort of weird edit and then me rambling on telling you about how I made a dumb mistake. And then I just started giggling. So we'll fix it. The bloopers at the end so you could just hear us laughing. Yeah, I'm about to start laughing now just talking about it. So let's send it to the episode.
Hello, world. Welcome to the Mile High Fi Podcast. I'm Carl Jensen with my co-host,
Doug Cunnington.
Doug, we're going to talk about retiring and what you would do if you wanted to retire right now. And I should preface that with saying that we're speaking on, what's the date? I don't even know.
It's November 17th.
Yeah. So the markets have taken quite the hit. I think we're probably in a recession, although I don't think it's been officially verified yet.
Gotcha. Yeah. I mean, the markets are down, what, like 25% this year so far?
Yeah, I think so.
And do you happen to remember the last time this happened?
The markets took a big hit. I think it was January of 2018. I think we were down over 20%. And then when COVID happened, it was more than that. But both of those were very short-lived, like the V-shaped recovery. It goes down real fast and back up. And I think now we're going to be down for quite a bit longer.
Gotcha. Why do you feel that way?
Before, well, COVID was short-lived and the government pumped a whole bunch of money into the economy to prop things back up. Now they're doing the opposite. The economy is overheated, so they're taking money away by raising interest rates. And it seems like, I just read this morning, one of the Fed dudes was like, yeah, we'll probably have to raise by like another 2% or something like that, which is quite significant. So mortgages could be close to 10% at some point, which is mind-boggling. If you would have told me a year ago that would be happening, I would have never believed you.
Yeah.
So, yeah, this is going to be a longer cycle. It's already been a lot longer, and them continuing to raise rates, eventually they'll get to a point where it plateaus, and then they'll start lowering. But, yeah, I think we'll have at least probably a full year of pain, if not more.
Yeah. So, yeah, this is one of those things where it feels risky, you know, if you were going to stop working. So we'll dig into that. And the thing is, I haven't talked to you in a bit, Carl, because you were out working on your house and stuff, which is going pretty good, right?
Yeah.
Almost done, like 90%?
Almost done. I have to move the plumbing from the outside wall to the inside. The plumbing is supposed to be like 5 tonight. So if I don't do that, my pipes are going to explode. So right after this podcast, I'll be doing that.
And there's one thing we haven't talked about, and our good friend JD Roth, he's actually sat in on a couple episodes. So there's a topic that he and I talked about that I do need to ask you about. I didn't prep you on it before, so I hope it's okay that I'm asking. So do you have any idea what it could be?
I do not have any idea. It could be anything coming from you, Doug.
What's your favorite Taylor Swift song and or album?
I don't really, the only Taylor Swift songs I've ever heard, I can't even say her name right, are because my children listen to her and sometimes play it over a speaker in the house. But I can't even name one song. Actually, I can hear them in my head. Like,
sing a few bars here. We'd love to hear that.
There's one where she's mad at someone, like, one day I'll be living in a city and all you'll ever be is mean or something like that. Gotcha. Do you know what song I'm talking about?
No, I don't know.
Okay.
I'm not sure.
I am not, in fact, going to sing it, but you should learn. If you learn on guitar, then I'll sing it.
Okay. I think a lot of the songs she's mad at someone, right?
I guess, but man, she shouldn't be mad. My kid tried to buy a concert ticket for her and she finally got through and she's like, yeah, Dad, I paid $250 for a ticket. I'm like, wow. Like, think of how many hours you had to work to do that. She's like, yeah, it was like 15 hours, but I don't care. I really want to go see that. Then the next day, I think it was this morning, actually, she's like, Dad, people are selling tickets in my section for like almost $1,000. I'm like, what?
Yeah, it's crazy.
I didn't know she was that big.
Yeah, really big. And well, that's good to know. We're going to have to expand your Taylor Swift knowledge. But yeah, JD loves Taylor, and as do like whatever, like a billion people in the world or something like that. It's kind of staggering. So I'm not a huge fan, but after talking to JD, I was like, all right, I'll check out 1989, which is JD's, I think, favorite album and when he really discovered Taylor. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, you can, you know, check out the episode that I did with JD a little while back. And we spent a few minutes and I was really trying to dig in. And the thing is, like, well, JD included, but you and I, Carl, we're kind of the wrong demographic. Like, we were a little older. We're like in our 20s when Taylor Swift started getting more popular and she was like a teenager. And, you know, we weren't really drawn to that kind of music, I don't think, right? You listen to like kind of hard rock, metal kind of stuff, right?
Yeah.
Okay. And I'm more like classic rock and maybe some like alternative rock kind of stuff, especially in those days. And it just kind of was off my radar. I didn't listen to pop music so much, but, and I did admit this to JD, when a Taylor Swift song would come on, I wouldn't change the channel. And I'm like, oh, this is not bad. Kind of catchy, you know, not too bad. And I bet that is what has happened to you too, right?
Yeah, maybe. I even volunteered to go to the show if my kid got a second ticket, but it turns out she did not. So I've saved myself from that fate. But yeah, she might not be bad. How was 1989? Did you actually take a listen?
I did. So I was about to get on a flight and I was like, you know what? I'll download it and check it out. So yeah, I would say, you know, pretty good. I read a review and it did mention it was sort of like 80s, like synth inspired for some of the songs, if I remember right. And I was like, oh, that's fine. So yeah, there's probably like three songs where I was like, oh, that's kind of catchy. I'd listen to that again. A lot of them were fine, but I, you know, wasn't drawn to them. So pretty good, but I'll have to check out more of Taylor's back catalog to see what's going on.
Don't her fans call themselves Swifties or something like that? Or
I think Swifers? That's right. I don't know. I think the Swifties. Yeah, I think Swiffer is the cleaner for your home.
Oh, the floor care product. Yeah.
Yeah. What would you call our fans?
I've never thought about that. Mile High Fi Clubbers. Oh, that's too long. We need some alliteration in there.
Yeah. Mile High, higher. I don't know.
Mesh T-shirt Club or something. We get a lot of emails about that, actually. We used to talk about how we're going to come out with a mesh see-through tank top, and we still haven't come out with that product, but we're still working on it. We're playing the long game.
Yeah.
Except for the t-shirt will not be long.
No. Okay, cool. So I thought we definitely needed to talk about Taylor Swift. So back on topic here, if you're on the cusp of retiring, what would you do? And I'm, you know, just you specifically, Carl, like if you were like, oh, we planned this out and we're like right on the edge of like the 4% rule. And that's what we've adopted, like psychologically, how would you deal with it? Would you go ahead and retire? Like, what would you do to mitigate, or actually, I'll just leave it at that. So what would you do? Would you pause and keep working your job?
Yes and no. So I think most people think about this the wrong way. Let's take these two hypothetical scenarios. Well, the one's not hypothetical because it's right now. Would you rather retire right now where the stock markets have taken a huge hit, or would you rather have retired like a year and a half ago where everything's great, the S&P 500 is hitting a new high every other week or whatever? I think the correct answer to it, although it doesn't seem like the comfortable answer, is right now, because the markets have already taken a hit. Your money, the sequence of return stuff is probably just about over. I actually did some research for this show, which I'm barely capable of. Yeah, I know. Rare, right? Amazing. I don't even usually read the outline, even though I write it. But anyway, I looked, and the average recession lasts about 10 months. We're probably in a recession. That's always a lagging thing. You don't know you're in it until like the next quarter or something like that. So the best possible time to retire would be in a downturn, because then the money is going to – usually what happens is the money goes down and then it goes back up, and it goes back up the most after it's gone down the most.
Okay. Yep. And that is counterintuitive, but I also did research. Look at us, like professionals. And it's the people that retired when the market was up, right? So like the beginning of 2022 before any kind of drop, or the whole previous year, right? Because at that point, they're drawing down and then everything goes down. So when you actually look at the balance of the portfolio, those people do worse off if you play out the simulation, right?
Which people do worse off? The people who retired when it was going up?
Yep, at the high.
Yeah.
At the high.
Yeah, which makes sense.
Yep, okay. And then, so knowing that, you would retire right now?
I think I would, like if it was right now, like today we're talking in mid-November, I would stick around till maybe first quarter of next year. And the reason I would do that is so I could max out my 401k for next year, throw another $20,000, or I think it's like $22,500 is the new 401k limit. So throw that into the oven when before everything fires up again. So I've got a little bit more money to work with. You know, it kind of like be nice to see the end of the war, like make sure things aren't going to get really shitty. But yeah, I think I would stick it out for a little while longer, but not that much longer.
Okay. And I think, you know, I'm fairly risk averse, and I've maybe said it before, like if I didn't get laid off, there's a chance I'd still be working at the same company because it was remote. It was kind of cushy. I was in that very safe middle management area where you get paid pretty well, but you could also delegate a lot of stuff to your team. So I was in this great spot where I could coast and get away with it because it was a big enough company to do that sort of thing. Also, I'm lazy. So I would probably stick around a little bit, just like you said. The caveat, and I bet you'll be with me on this one, if you really hated your job, if you were like, every day is the worst day of my life, then I would say, you know what, quit that. You can find another job and work part-time to sort of like temper the situation a little bit from a cash flow perspective. But if you really hated your job, I would say, you know, go ahead, stop. Like, you don't want to have every day be miserable.
Yeah, I would do that regardless of what's going on. If you can, life is too short to be miserable. Don't make crazy, dangerous moves. But yeah, if you hate your job, you should find something else to do.
And the reason why this is an issue is the sequence of returns risk. So what can you define that for us, Carl, for people that don't know?
So if you need $1 million to retire, yeah, I'm probably not going to do a good job of this. So if you need $1 million to retire and you quit, and then the next year the stock market takes, or the next day the stock market takes a 20% hit, then you only have $800,000 to compound, and you're at that time you're in withdrawal mode too. So the more money you take out, the less money there is going to be working for you. And at the same time, everything's going down, and that compounds. Just like it compounds good, that'll compound bad and hurt you, especially if you've got a big downturn early on. It's going to, like, that's the biggest risk to retirement, is a downturn when it starts. I don't think I actually answered the question. What would be your definition, Doug?
Yeah, that's pretty good. I shouldn't have done that to you. That was my fault. So basically, in the simplest way, is you have poor returns early in your retirement. Like, that explains it. And then if you look and you actually gave a good example. So if you get those bad returns early on and it takes X amount for you to live and your expenses are a certain amount, you will not be taking 4% out. You'll be taking like 5 or 6% because you're drawing from a smaller portfolio.
Yep.
So yeah, I think between the two of us, we have one brain total. So, and that's the big deal. And the other part that we usually don't consider as much because we've been doing great with inflation is inflation. So that is just as bad, if not worse, because we haven't been talking about it because inflation's been fantastic for, I mean, probably our adult lives overall, right? Like, have you experienced any bad inflation since you've been working?
No, I think this is the first time we've ever had crazy inflation like this. I mean, maybe it happened when I was super young, but like around 1980, I didn't know enough to even know what was going on at the time. So yeah, this is the first time that's happened. It's been so good for so long, right? 2 or 3%. I think the Fed mandate is 3%.
Yeah.
This is the first time it's gone off the rails.
Yep. So at that point, I mean, it basically plays kind of the same. It plays out the same that if inflation is up, then you're going to be drawing more down because it's going to cost more for you to live and your expenses are going to be higher than what you anticipated. So it's a little, you know, it's a little tougher because we have the recency bias of very low inflation and we're like, they have this dialed in. Like we're not going to run into an issue, but here we're reminded that it's kind of cyclical and it happens. So, and have you done anything personally to like deal with inflation?
We actually have. We went out to eat maybe 3 or 4 weeks ago now and we got our bill and it was like over $100 and like, holy crap. I don't know if we've ever spent that much on just a normal meal. We have spent that much on like a real fancy, maybe once a year type thing. But yeah, it was over $100. And we looked at each other. We're like, you know, this is kind of nice, but not that nice. Let's cut this stuff back. So yeah, we did. We haven't been to a sit-down restaurant since that time.
Yeah. I didn't know Taco Bell raised their prices that much.
It's crazy, man. The box is like 4X what it used to cost. They still call it the $5 box, I think, but now it's just
$20.
Just deceitful. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think like we stopped eating out as much for a while. And then when things opened back up in the last year or so, we've been going out more. But yeah, like ordering a drink or two, you know, beers are like $8 or something like that. Like it used to be like $3-4 back in the day, right?
Yeah.
Crazy.
It's kind of a good challenge though, because you learn and you strive to make tasty meals at home, which is always way, way cheaper. And so Mindy just had her birthday. I'm like, you know what? She really likes steak. And I thought of you, Doug, because you made a really good steak. I'm gonna try to make a good steak. It was harder than I thought. It came out okay, but man, I messed it up a little bit. They were a little bit too far done.
Okay. Yeah, it is tough. It's tough. I mean, I made a lot of steaks to like dial it in. Yeah. I still make mistakes too. It's tough.
Missed steaks.
Yeah, missed steaks. Okay. So what can you do to mitigate the risk of sequence of returns and issues with inflation? Because now it's more front of mind. So there's a couple things we can do. And Carl, I'll let you kick it off here.
I have never met someone in my life who doesn't have anything they can cut out. Like I've never met someone living on ramen noodles, rice and beans that keeps their house at 58 degrees and takes their bike everywhere in the middle of winter. So there's always something you can cut out. For us, it was going out to eat. That's probably pretty much it for us. We work from home. We don't spend a lot on fuel. Mindy will kill me if I turn the thermostat down anymore. But I think everyone always has something they can cut from their budget, even if it causes a little temporary discomfort.
Yep. And for us, I've kind of alluded to it in some other episodes, but you know, cutting back on drinking, you know, we're big consumers of beer. So that's pretty expensive. I mean, when I look at, like, I do the grocery shopping around here. So I kind of know how much like a case of beer costs at Sam's, which is, you know, a cheap place to get beer, but you know, it was like 20-25% of like the grocery bill, which is a lot, embarrassing. But that also has a side effect of us being healthier and sleeping better, which is another terrible realization that I'm finding is like, I just sleep better. Like I slept 9 hours last night, man.
Wow. That's incredible.
No beer. And it's the saddest thing because I like drinking beer and other alcohol, But unfortunately, there are many downsides to it. One of them is the cost. So yeah, we could cut down on beer. So sad. Are you going to cut down on beer?
Yeah, I haven't had one in a long time, actually. But Doug, you'll be joining us for Thanksgiving, which will be over by the time this comes up. But we will have a good beer on Thanksgiving. Just a quick side note. Doug, you're the beer person. Like, what is a really good beer, or what should we have with Thanksgiving dinner or before Thanksgiving?
So I really like Belgian beers. So St. Bernardus 12 is like one of the go-tos. It's very similar to the West Vleteren 12, except it is not as rare and you can just go to the store and buy it. So St. Bernardus 12 is fantastic. And then I have a couple Imperial Stouts that I can bring over too. And then a couple of my home brews.
Okay. What store would I go to get St. Bernardus 12?
You can go, I think you can get it at Wyatt's pretty easily. Okay. That's kind of my go-to.
Cool. I will check it out.
Yeah. Really good. And you know, anything in that Belgian dark, strong, or quadruple genre, like that'll be a good one.
Yeah. So I like your example, Doug, because it has compound effects. Not only are you spending less money, but your health is increasing in multiple ways. You're sleeping better. You've got less empty calories. And yeah, there's other things like that. Mm-hmm. If you can bike or walk somewhere instead of spending money on fuel, you're going to increase your health and decrease the money you spend.
And the thing is, man, my hair's growing back too.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Damn, you should write a book.
Yeah. Okay. So I'll throw in a couple other things. So the allocation of your investment. So this is not investment advice, but you know, we've talked in the past about like our allocation. So you have no bonds, you have just stock in your portfolio.
Correct. Right? Stock and real estate investments.
Okay. So real estate is obviously another huge piece. What percentage of your total net worth is real estate?
I think it's probably 25% real estate, 75% stocks. And the real estate is a single family rental, which we're still working on to get rented out, a bunch of syndication deals. And yeah, that's it.
Okay, cool. And then for us, do you count your primary residence in that?
I do not.
Okay, cool. So in that case, we have no real estate other than what we're living in here. And then for us, we do have a little bit on the bond front. So I don't know exactly what my wife has in her portfolio, but if I had to estimate between the two of us, we probably have like 15-20% in bonds, which, you know, it does cost us as far as returns, but it gives us a little bit more of a ballast, I guess, to stay steady during these downturns. In theory, we shouldn't go down as much as, you know, if we just had 100% stock allocation. So align that to your risk tolerance. And if you have real estate, you know, that counts too. So, you know, whatever you're considering, or if you have precious metals or fucking crypto or whatever, right? Do you have much crypto?
No, I have zero in crypto. Doug, did you ever go through with any crypto purchases?
I did. I got, I put 50%. No, I'm just kidding. I think it was about 4,000. So it was a little bit to get a little taste and see how the mechanics worked. And I didn't go in at the height, but I think it's probably down like 40 to 50% from when I purchased.
Did you buy a specific coin, or I think they've got like index funds of crypto now too. What did you do specifically?
Bitcoin and Ether.
Okay.
So just kept it simple, got those two. And I remember when we talked about it, I was like, this is the long haul. Like, I'm not trying to like jump in and out and try to time it or anything. I was like, all right, we'll check in 25 years.
Yeah.
So.
Cool.
Yeah. We'll see how it turns out. And it wasn't it wasn't enough to like make a huge difference either way.
Sure. So.
Okay. And this is one thing that, you know, you mentioned that you would do, Carl, is have cash on hand the first few years. So can you talk about like how that would work? So you have your stock allocation, let's say you retire, how does the cash help you?
Yeah. So I'd probably have about maybe a year of cash in the highest yielding bank account I could find. And I probably wouldn't touch it in a downturn. So if we were in a recession or a 20% correction, I would touch it. Then I would draw from that money. And the reason is I don't want to sell stocks when they're depressed to fund my existence. I'd rather take money from the cash hoard.
Would you say cash what?
Hoard, H-O-A-R-D. Okay. Yeah, that means something else.
I don't know what a cash whore is. What is that? Is that a new thing? It's a new five thing.
It's another form of FI, Doug, but we'll talk about that later. Yeah. And then when the stock market, I plow through that, the average recession lasts 10 months, you'd hope you could live off that money for most of the time of the downturn. Then when things recover, you just replenish that cash, sell some stocks, and put money back in the cash.
Okay. And technically, right, this is a psychological thing because in theory, right, leaving the money in all stocks would be like the best situation. But is that correct?
I think it would be. Go Curry Cracker had an article about that, and he suggested 100% stock allocation is the way to go for long-term. Mm-hmm. For the long term.
And I guess, you know, the risk is the market drops like 90% and then you have to withdraw the other 10% or whatever to live. That's an extreme example that hopefully would not be true. But then you would go down to zero and then you're screwed, right?
Yeah. If that happens, we have other things to worry about.
Right. So that is one thing to consider, but yeah, kind of would be unusual, to say the least. So we already talked about like withdrawing less, and part of withdrawing less is like not spending so much. So find fat in your expenses, get rid of that. The other thing is you could like get a job. You can do, you know, something part-time, maybe somewhere you enjoy working. Maybe you get discounts there. So like maybe I could work at a homebrew shop. I get to talk to people that like brew beer all day. And then maybe I get discounts on something that's a hobby. So it's kind of fueling. So another one of those compound things that where you're getting multiple benefits from like a single decision.
Yeah. Working at Taco Bell, you get the free meal there, you get paid, and you don't have to, one of your meals is comped for you.
Yeah. I mean, there's almost no downside to Taco Bell, I would say.
I don't think so. I can't think of any.
Yeah. It's a good place. I haven't eaten there in a while. I thought it was a long time. It's been like a month.
They did bring the Mexican pizza back, which is pretty exciting.
You know what? I've never ordered a Mexican pizza. Why do you like it so much?
I don't know. You know, I remember having it the first time, like 20 years ago, and I didn't like it that much, but it just grew on me, I guess.
What all is on there?
I don't know. It's like two tortillas with some meat or whatever that substance is. I don't think it's actual meat. It's some kind of...
It's a meat-looking substance. Okay.
It's a meat product. Whenever you hear the word product, you know the word preceding it isn't real, like cheese product, meat product. But yeah. Whatever the chemicals are, they taste pretty good. Yeah. But.
And what you described is like every fucking thing on the menu. There's a tortilla, some meat, cheese, a little lettuce. So it's just flat.
It's all the stuff pretty much rearranged with different quantities. Yeah.
And it's great. It would be great. So, okay. So you could get a part-time job. The other thing, which is a little, you know, maybe not as common, but you could just spend the dividend. So instead of selling and like realizing the loss during a down market, you can just withdraw the dividends. So you had mentioned that recently, Carl, and that's a decent strategy, right?
Yeah. So now I looked it up. VTSX is paying like a 1.54% annual dividend. So if you've got $1 million in there, that's about $15,400 for you to spend. Dividends go up and down. A lot of times if a company is struggling, they will reduce their dividend. But I think they typically try to avoid that because people love dividends and they have a fit when that happens. But yeah, and that just might be a good retirement plan too. Stop your dividend reinvestment and live off that.
Cool. And there are some stocks like VTSAX, you said like 1.54%, but there are other stocks that pay like more. And there's a whole like, you know, group of people that do dividend investing, right?
Yeah, dividend growth investors. Those people are passionate. If you speak out against their religion, they will be very, very angry. And you can get into some good Twitter fights over that. We should have one of them on. I can't think of one off the top of my head, but we'll get someone on who's a dividend investor.
Yeah, I know I listened to a podcast a while back and yeah, the person was super into it. And I was like, you could do better like mathematically, but they were just looking at cash flow. They were only thinking about the cash flow from the dividends.
Yeah.
So I guess it's valid, right?
I think you can do better. I think there's been studies done where a growth portfolio usually beats a dividend portfolio over the long term. Now we're going to get hate mail. What's our email address? Doug@milehighfi.com.
You got it. Okay. That's right. Awesome. So any other things before I kind of wrap it up with a quote?
I don't think so. Go for it, Doug.
Okay. So I will give Michael Kitsis a plug. And I actually listened to the Bigger Pockets Money podcast where Scott and your wife Mindy interviewed Michael and they were talking about the 4% rule. So that's episode 351 if you want to check it out. But I went back into Michael's archive about the sequence of return risks. So here it is. I'm going to try to read it verbatim as well as I can. It turns out that the true driver of sequence of returns risk and safe withdrawal rates are the returns that the retiree earns over the first decade, and specifically the real returns over the first decade that provide an indication of whether the retirement portfolio will have produced enough real growth to keep up with inflation-adjusted spending for the rest of retirement. Basically, the first decade matters the most. Yeah. So you can look at the first couple years, but even if you make it past like the first 2 or 3 years, you have to look at the full decade. And once you get past that, then you're probably okay. And you can make really good assumptions. Number one, you're 10 years older. You don't have to think about having as much money in there because you're going to die sooner. And you also know what happened in the previous 10 years. And yeah, anything else there?
I don't know. One quick thought I had, I had a friend, an acquaintance who would not invest any money. I'm like, why don't you do any of that? And they're like, well, I'm probably going to die young, so I don't need to save anything. I'm like, so what's your backup plan if that doesn't actually come to fruition? It was a very weird comment, but I was just thinking like your first 10 years are the most important. And if it doesn't work out, you could just hope to die after the first 10 years. I mean, I hope not, but
yeah. We will link to the original full article that Michael wrote. I think it was like 2014 or 2012, but he goes into great detail about sequence of returns risk and things that you should consider. So I do encourage you to check it out. And I think a point that I made earlier is just like, we have plenty of time for retirement. So if you see things are different than you anticipated, like you can adjust along the way. And that is an important part to consider.
Yeah, you don't withdraw in a vacuum. You know what's going on with the economy and everything else. So be flexible. If the shit changes, you need to change too.
All right. Well, thanks, Carl. We'll catch you on the next episode.
Yeah. See you, Doug.
Thanks for listening to the show. That was the Mile High Five podcast. And I'm Doug Cunnington, the Balder host. And Carl Jensen is the cool, sexy one. If you dig the show, please do 3 things for us. Number one, tell a friend, a family member, an enemy about the show. We really don't care who you tell. Maybe forward them a specific show that you know that they will like. It's the single most helpful thing that you can do to spread the word. It's like giving us a virtual high five, and actually we don't give high fives in person, so the virtual kind's pretty good. And more importantly, your friend or family member or even your enemy will appreciate the fact that you were thinking of them. Number two, make sure you're following or subscribed on your podcast app, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Overcast, YouTube, whatever you're using, and that way you won't miss a show. And number three, please leave us a rating and review. We read them on the show occasionally, and you might hear yours out there on an upcoming episode. Quick disclaimer, this show is not financial or legal advice. I'd actually be surprised if it sounded like it. It's really just for entertainment, and that's at least what we're hoping for. But seriously, get advice from professionals. Carl and I are just 2 guys with microphones that sit in my basement and talk. So we'll catch y'all next week. So here it is. I'm going to try to read it verbatim as well as I can. It turns out that the true driver of sequence of returns risk and safe withdrawal rates are the returns that the retiree earns over the first decade, and specifically the real returns over the first decade. I knew I'd mess it up. So that's just a comma there. The real returns over the first decade that provide an indication.
This is not financial advice, people.
Yeah. All right. We're gonna stick with it. The real returns.
You've got this. You can do it. I believe in you.
Over the first decade. You just get laughing. And you can't help. All right.
Well, there goes Michael Kitsis. Okay, I'll try to finish up. That provide an indication of whether the retirement portfolio will have produced enough real growth to keep up with inflation-adjusted spending for the rest of retirement. What was he trying to say there, Doug? I think we've the train went off the rails.
I don't know what happened to me there.